guest in the studio, and I don't want you to miss a woman with this woman, miss a minute with this woman. Elijah Jane Schneider, are you familiar with Natalie McMaster? Of course,
probably. Yeah, I love that music.
Well, I can just imagine the two of you on stage together. Tell me, do you have a Cape Breton? Because I think that's where Natalie is originally from, a Cape Breton area. Do you have their dialect down too?
Oh, you know, that's one place that I haven't actually gone. But you know what? I just went to the International Folk Alliance in Memphis.
Uh-huh.
And I got a whole bunch of Nova Scotians and Newfoundlanders because it's hard to get to them, you know? There's like a long plane ride, an extremely long drive, a bunch of ferries, you know? It'll take the full 2 months to really excavate that area, you know?
Well, I was so excited when David was nice enough to email me about your coming. And, you know, because the voices of South Park, practically all of the women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is fantabulous. It really is.
Yeah.
And so you were a child prodigy, so to speak, with the violin.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. I started when I was 7, though.
Yeah, but, you know, you're pretty proficient. And, Eliza Jane, you're going to come out with your first CD soon, aren't you?
Yeah, it's called Gypsy Grass, and I play fiddle. And I called it Gypsy Grass because it's sort of bluegrass and it's sort of gypsy. Just kind of happened that way.
Well, but I think the thing that was so amazing the other night when, you know, I went to hear you, and first of all, I thought it was great even before the performance started. You know, were those all your voices, or were they actually voices of the people you interviewed? I wasn't even totally sure when I was listening.
Those were people I interviewed.
That's what I thought. They were actually the people you interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And then because we heard some of them, we saw some of them then in the performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, there you are, you know, this extraordinarily talented young woman. So how did you get into all this study of dialects?
Oh, well, my father is a drama teacher, and he used to do different accents. In fact, a lot of my friends never knew where he was from. They'd come over, and he'd be speaking with a German accent, and he was very intense, you know, or he'd be speaking with a French accent, or he'd be speaking, you know, he'd just be sort of, and he wouldn't even realize he was doing it. And my friends would always be somewhat intimidated, you know, and then they wouldn't really know what to make of him.
And your mom is this high-pressured lawyer who's really fighting for the good causes, but you have the great and good fortune, you know, when I was watching you, that you actually spent a lot of your very early years on an Indian reservation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because your dad was teaching there?
Yeah, my dad taught at the Boganegishig School, and my mom was an Indian law attorney. That's what they called it at the time, when that term was still PC, I guess. And she was fighting to protect the Ojibwe tribe from the federal government. And then she found out the tribal government was extorting taxes from its own people, and she published a newsletter and they fired her. So we moved to upstate New York, where she specialized in handicapped and education law. So she's always sort of been a hero.
Well, that's kind of the story of your life, isn't it? I mean, there your mom's fighting for the causes, and then she finds out there's some corruption.
Yeah, exactly.
but also, you know, just because the range of characters, but it's not just the range of characters. We realize these characters came out of your real experience that you're traveling around the country and just kind of asking, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
And you find out. And I thought, well, wow, you know, here's this young woman that she's kind of being raised in a totally different culture. She's getting very different languages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But even more so, a different approach to existence almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I always tell people that, you know, I was learning how to be a person from the elder Chippewa women who ran the daycare. You know, they'd all sit around in a big circle, and there's these big women, and you'd sit there and listen to them, you know, and my parents were working, you know, they were in society already, but, you know, there are certain principles that I take for granted that a lot of people don't even consider, and, you know, when it comes to stuff like packaged meat and, you know, giving back when you take something, like, they have this whole... Actually, you know, Judaism and Native American treatment of killing animals for food is very similar. excuse me.
Though I know you've been fighting heroically a bug, actually, but you've been here.
Yeah.
And yet your performance was just amazing, because it's not an easy performance. I mean, you're on, you know, obviously it's a single person, but, you know, all the voices you have to do, literally all the physicality of it. And so, and I had heard before the show started that you weren't feeling very well.
Yeah.
So you are allowed, you know.
I'm allowed to cough.
Yes, you are.
Well, it was interesting to see how the different characters would treat their own cold. you know, cause like I had this woman, Ida, who was smoking, you know, so she had the smoker's cough. She's the first point in the show where I'm allowed to cough, you know, so she's that? Like, I used to go to Coney Island swimming to the beach with my friends. You know,
I was wondering, I thought, has that been slightly enhanced by her real cold?
I do that every time.
But you could see it, actually. You know, whether you're actually, you do have that, you know, monologue or essay, you know, in which you're talking to this Native American who is selling, you know, to the tourists or in the bingo parlor, I'm not sure, with, you know, the beads or the blankets or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of that whole sense of spaces and, you know, kind of almost trying to walk in those, all those spaces where there's totally different, you know, territories. And we just see that. Mm-hmm. In that, and I think that's what makes it so interesting, because you're weaving your own blanket, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, Sarah, you're in Berkeley, of course, and in Berkeley, somebody's being protesting about something. Uh-huh. You were opposed to the first invasion of Iraq, right?
Uh-huh.
And a policeman had the audacity to grab you a little too hard.
Broke my wrist, actually. Yeah.
And so for a student, a violinist, this is not easy.
No, yeah, broken wrist. And, you know, not being able to write when you're in college. And, you know, this is back in the early 90s when people still did use their hands to write sometimes, you know.
Right, right.
So I that's why I started recording people. And there was actually something going on at UCLA at the time called the Free Speech Movement.
Uh-huh.
And there's a place, it was called Bruin Walk. It was the central campus area, and we would get behind a podium. And that was back when they were trying to legalize marijuana, and there was a big thing. And, of course, they're successful in that after 15 years or so. You know, I got the idea from that of just dragging people off of Bruin Walk and putting them behind a podium and asking them to speak their mind. And you get these, what we refer to them as South Campus people, sort of the more mousy, you know, science types who don't generally come out and start yelling and screaming about things, you know, and they start yelling and screaming about things once asked, you know, and so I just kind of took that sentiment across the country and just started putting a microphone in front of people and seeing what they had to say.
Well, you know, and in so many ways, when I was realizing you were talking to these people, and, you know, people have such very different perceptions and sensibilities in the world. In fact, sometimes it can be shocking because, you know, there seems like a really nice person that you really think you're going to have a lot in common. And you find out they're still nice, but that they see the world so differently.
So differently.
Yeah. And I thought with all the talent you have and the ear you have and the whole sense of language, not just as words, but sounds, the kind of feeling that come with sounds. I thought, do you have a problem, actually, Eliza? When you're listening to somebody, you're listening to as much in your ears how they're actually saying words.
Yeah, the music of the language. Yeah. Yeah, I do have that problem, actually, to tell you the truth. Sometimes I don't hear what people are saying. And then I go back and listen to it. Luckily, you know, that's part of the joy of having a microphone on. You get to hear it twice.
And you have some great lines. You have some absolutely great lines in the play. You know, like one of the ones where you're telling your professor, we're going to let her just recover over there just for a few minutes. Anyways, so she breaks her wrist. She's got her tape recorder. And, you know, one door doesn't close, but at least it's slightly, you know, closed for a while. And so another door opens. And so you decide to go across the country and asking people, you know, well, what's happening? And I think that you think it's only going to be like a couple months, 3 months. But we got a big country with a lot of people. And, you know, Debbie, why don't we go get her some water? So anyway, I do hope you didn't catch this here. I would hope that Tampa.
No, I brought it here for all of you. I care.
So we're going to isolate. We're going to isolate you over there. But I thought one of the great lines you had to your professor, because obviously he would not be keen, or she wouldn't be keen on you saying, I want to study these dialects, you know. Well, you know, and you say, hey, I think it's the last maybe archaeological digs that, and I thought that was the greatest but very true line.
Yeah, well, the idea that dialects and residual phonemes are the only archaeological dig that we have in America, it's not like you can go to, you know, the Rocky Mountains and like Masada, you know, you can dig up some old clay pots and carbon date them and figure out what your ancestors were doing, you know. But if you go to the hills of West Virginia, you can hear sounds that are very similar to the mountains in Arkansas, and you can hear those same sounds coming up and through Ireland and Scotland, those hard R's and those flat A's, you know, like when a southern woman says, ma, 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 you know, that ah comes directly from Ireland with top of the marnitia, you know, and then those hard R's, same thing. Whereas like in the tidewater areas of the south, you know, you've got like the R dropping, which means that those people who were there were keeping contact with the British merchants and the upper class merchants were talking to the British when they started dropping their R's in the 1700s and 1800s, as opposed to the rest of us that, you know, took the R pronouncing from the 1600s when they first came over.
Well, you know, I think that's what's so great, because when you watch, you, number one, it's very entertaining, but also it's very thought-provoking. You have some really, excuse me, good moments where you will hit a zinger and one says, ooh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you leave it, excuse me, I think I'm catching it already.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
Impossible.
So, Debbie, you just carry on.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have been making out with you this morning. It was very forward of me and very inconsiderate.
Well, anyway, very awkward. That's one thing in radio. Coughing is absolutely not allowed, you know.
Oh, we're breaking all the rules. We're rebels.
Well, let's hope we're rebels in the best way, you know. But anyway.
Well said.
When I got done, you know, watching you, I really got thinking that the enormous heritage of all of the voices and you know that you're quite aware that, you know, that it comes from us as being really a nation of immigrants. You know, except for the native people that you keep reminding us.
Yeah.
And their voices, a very different type of expression even.
Yeah.
Come from something very different.
Very different, yeah.
And I think the thing that's so interesting is that in a way that both unites us, but it also is kind of part of our islands of separation. Mm-hmm. Not that I want us to all sound the same. That would be unbelievably boring and impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, it's really kind of interesting because, you know, immediately, you know, like I'm from Midwest, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone thinks, oh, well, Midwesterners, they all sound, you know, flat and boring kind of, you know. But anyone in, say, the state of Illinois, we would know instantly if you were not only from Chicago,
mm-hmm.
but if you were from the north side of Chicago or the south side mm-hmm. of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if you were from Peoria
mm-hmm.
or way down East St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
You'd know instantly.
Yeah, and well, of course, that's true all around the world with all different dialects, you know, and especially places where they've had a long time to percolate. Transportation has a lot to do with it as well.
Sure.
You know, you've got like a large concentration in a small area of different kinds of dialects in New York, and it's even more diverse in a small area in London. You know, you can go a couple blocks, and you could tell where people are from within, you know, blocks of London, because those same people in those same families stayed in that little neighborhood for generations, you know, and you have that in New York. And then when you start to get into like the trains and the, you know, mass transportation going west, you know, it's, you have to travel a lot further before you get those distinctions in dialect in the American West.
And so I don't want to focus on this so much, but you are so multi-talented, really, that I decided one has to go see this twice, really. Because
you know, there was a girl who came last night who had come for the second time, and she said that she was able to get so much more out of it the second time. She knew the characters, and then she was like listening more to what, of course, they're all changing up what they say too, because I interviewed each of these people for about an hour, you know, so like one night my, Native American guy from the Ojibwe reservation will talk about, you know, this money system's all gonna come crashing down sooner or later, you know, cause money's not where it's at. And then the next night he'll be talking about, these dolls went for $11,000 out in Boston. You know, they're a good investment potential, you know.
That's what I realized, because, you know, you really give us quite, I repeat, a beautiful quilt mm-hmm. of this country. And particularly, I think it's really great That is from your perspective. Yeah. But the dialects themselves are so fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, that you think, and you kind of get into that. And so I thought, because there were so many zingers there that really give one so much to think about. And then I think one of the most amazing performances you have in that, in your freedom of speech, is when, you know, you're in a really precarious situation with this ex-Viet, I guess it was in New Orleans, you know, vet. And this guy is trouble. He's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think I ever would have thought of seeing my way with an aria out of a rape.
Right. Yeah, I thought about it in the past, and my friends and I decided that if it ever happened, we would, like, bend over and start eating the grass just to, like, scare him away, you know, just to freak him out a little bit and then run, you know. But there was no grass.
No, not in the streets of New Orleans.
No, and I didn't think, to tell you the truth, it just was something that I just did.
It didn't happen for real.
Oh, it did. Oh. All that stuff happened for real. That's all true. Every word that any one of those people in my show says is something they said to me. I didn't write the show. I transcribed the show.
You really sang your way out of that situation?
Mm-hmm.
Did you sing that aria?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember. I think I did. Yeah, and there's something about Karanome that's a little placating, you know. It starts high and it comes down low, you know. You know,
yeah, it was beautiful.
Don't kill me, crazed Vietnam friend. You know, could be that. You know, it's Italian. He doesn't speak Italian.
No, but that truly is even more amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the butterfly knife is for theatrical effect, but there was definitely murder in his eyes. It was going to happen.
Well. And that's also what we're aware of, because you go, then so you did actually see someone getting a drug fix, so to speak. And the really power of that woman talking to you, you know, and this is where one, you know, that you don't pay any attention anymore to the dialects you're doing, because there was so much power in that. She's got this incredibly abusive situation she's in. Mm-hmm. And you manage, really, I thought... You know, well, we got her junkie husband, and we realized this poor guy, his neurons are just so on fire, not connecting well and right at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, I mean, it is really, it truly is a tour de force.
Oh, thank you.
But you got to have a very special heart, and I really think this goes back, you know, to your really good fortune, I think, of being in that situation in a childhood, because I really think that you do give the life to those kind of spaces and the way we are in those places. And I thought, this is very, very special. And so,
I'm so glad you came last night.
Oh, I really, you know, first of all, I always try and go to see, because I figure that that's when you actually, you know, you can read all the reviews you want, but that doesn't give you a sense of it.
Yeah.
In fact, when I read your reviews, or the reviews about you, because, you know, you've got glowing reviews, I kind of saw it as a much more intellectual.
Uh-huh.
It's not that it wasn't intellectual, but I didn't expect such a powerful emotional experience.
Oh, well, you can write a review if you want. You get the female side of things. A lot of those reviews are written by men, and they don't transcribe their emotional experience it's not as accessible to them.
You're perhaps right.
You know?
But also, I was so impressed, you know, with all that you do. You know, because this isn't the only thing you've done by any means, you know, that you've written other plays, monologues, et cetera. In fact, this was an award-winning one. You won the International New York Fringe Festival, you know, was it 2003, 2004?
2003, yeah.
Yeah, 2003. But, and then I thought... And now I know you're going to do something for MTV, and maybe that's already started. You're going to be Oprah Winfrey and Beyonce.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, several voices, but I'm really looking forward to the Ugandan adoption woman.
Look, Evangelina Jolie, baby. Yeah. I know you want her, but you cannot have her, Angelina. Yeah. No, I helped find the Uganda notes in the library of my mentor for Forrest Whitaker when he was learning his Ugandan dialect for The Last King of Scotland, which he ended up winning an Oscar for. But yeah, I've done extensive dialect research all over the world.
Well, I would think, you know, I hope when you, I know you're so busy here, but because the students must just be following you with their little notebooks, you know, because you just mentioned Forrest Whitaker. You know, I mean, obviously you're a dialect expert, which is so important to all these roles. But also, I would be really remiss because a movie I dearly love, Finding Nemo.
Uh-huh.
Are you one of the voices in Finding Nemo?
I am various Australian fish. Yes.
Oh, okay. And you know, when you were talking a little, was that the way the process happened that you didn't have the film, so to speak, or the, you know, shoots in front of you? You kind of all got together and you just talked?
Oh, yeah. That's the great thing about how they do some of those. You know, there's a loop group, they call it. But I mean, these loop groups that they use with Pixar are some of my favorite voiceover people of all time, like Lorraine Newman and Jess Harnell. If you look up some of these are names you wouldn't, well, Lorraine you might know, but you know, Jess Harnell is somebody you don't necessarily know who he is, but you look him up and he's been in every animated thing. You know, he played the big turtle, you know, in that one. And he's like, dude, the EAC, man, you know. And, yeah, it was just such a pleasure to be. And like Phil Proctor, he's the guy who was in the Fire Sign Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Just brilliant, man. And, you know, they'll say to him, okay, you're an 18th century Scotsman singing a traditional tune. And he'll just bust out. And half the time it's a real one, you know. And he and I improvised in Russian at one point, in the language Russian, you know. It was just such a pleasure to work with these people. And you're in there all day. And then, you know, they'll use some of the stuff. Monsters, Inc., they used a lot more of the outtakes than they did in Finding Nemo. Because I think they had, in Finding Nemo, they had Ellen and Albert going off themselves. So they probably used a lot more of their additional, you know, fun improvisational dialogue in the actual film than they would use, you know, ours. But
And so what would they tell you for Finding Nemo to be, what, I don't remember the Australian fish, sorry.
Oh, there was that group scene where we were all in the net, you know, and it's like, swim down, you know, swim down.
did you have a sense that it was good fish and water?
They tell you where you're at. They tell you what you're doing. They give you your situation. Sometimes they'll give you a picture.
Oh, yeah. That would be great for you. You would just, I mean, obviously you are great, but I mean, and so I guess I was really watching and I thought this woman has some, not just irons in the fire. I mean, you've got a molten. I mean, it's just molten. And so did you ever have a problem really with focus? You're doing.
Ask my mom. Does she ever have a problem with focus? Oh my goodness.
No, but I meant really, it's really admirable and it's exciting. Really.
Oh, thank you.
You know, so, okay, you've been so generous with your time. And so the listeners can still see you tonight. You're going to be tonight.
7:30.
Hillsborough Community College, Ebor Campus, Main Stage Theater.
Last chance.
Yeah, and so it really, really a tour de force. So listen, when you do get that CD out, you have to send it to the station.
Okay.
I think it would be really fab.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll send it to you. There's some rather political songs on it.
Oh, well, you're very political. You know, and you're not afraid to say it like it is.
It's true.
And so that's part of what makes freedom of speech so great. And again, that is what we've been talking about. And there are 24, aren't there 24 or 25 monologues that you do?
34.
Oh, 34.
Characters.
I'm sorry.
34 characters.
I'm sorry. I cut you short there.
No, that's all right.
And it's called Freedom of Speech. And not only it's speech in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
So, Eliza Jane Schreibner, thank you so much for coming in.
Schneider.
That's
okay.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
That's
oh, no,
all
sorry.
Right.
Sometimes I call people very strange names.
You are allowed.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So, okay, thank you so much. And I thought
thank
I'd
you.
Play again, Natalie, because I wish we had heard a little more of your fiddle the other night.
Oh, well, I'll send you a CD.
Oh, great. But in some performances, do you play more violin? I mean, because you sure could.
Well, the next show that I'm working on, I'm going to be playing a lot more music.
Oh, great. I understand you do some Pittsburgh rap music. Actually.
I do.
Yeah. Well, we had a sense of that last night. Or Thursday night, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. So let's put on some more Natalie McMaster. And thanks again.